from here. Don't go away when you can take it from here. Why don't you stay and maybe join in the fun now? The show has begun.
Here's Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with June Whitfield, Wallace Eaton, and the Keynotes, all inviting you to...
Take it from here.
Well, listeners, we're trying something quite new this week. Cop this. We're going to do the whole of Homer's Odyssey in 10 minutes. Do I hear someone say impossible?
I think it's Homer's solicitor. Mm.
Nevertheless, we're going to have a good old Grecian bash. Hang on to your helmets.
After successfully winning the Battle of Troy, Ulysses and his men embarked to return home. But en route, he was involved in the strange series of misfortunes recounted in Homer's Odyssey. But at last, 20 years later, Ulysses was home. With his faithful Telemachus at his side, he strode into his hall and called joyfully to his wife, Penelope.
Penelope! Penny! I'm home, darling, it's me, Uli. Darling, where are you?
Look, Skipper, you don't want me around. I mean... seeing the good lady again for the first time after 20 years. I mean, oh, dear. I'll nip along to the seaman's mission. I wrote and told her to expect me. Give my regards to Mrs. Yu.
Oh, nonsense, good Telemachus. Sable with me the delight on my Penelope's face as she views me after 20 years' absence.
Oh,
that's a... Sophie, I hear her sandals on the marble carpet. Oh, joy. Oh, bliss.
Oh. And where the devil have you been?
Darling, you're being most unreasonable. If you had the slightest idea what I've been through.
20 years and not as much as a letter. One lousy picture postcard of Helen of Troy. Having wonderful time, wish you were her.
But, Mrs. Ulysses, if you just let the skipper explain...
Explain? Yes. I'm told by the War Office my husband has been demobbed. Expect him home the end of the week. I get my hair done, a nice shepherd's pie in the oven, and I wait. 20 years!
But you won't let us tell you what delayed it.
I'm not interested. If you want your supper, that shepherd's pie is still in the oven. I'm going home to Mother. She's in Crete.
Concrete, I hope.
I heard that. Oh, she warned me. If you choose to marry an ancient Greek, you're bound to come Acropolis. Well, this is the end.
Oh, no. No, I must speak up. Mrs. Ulysses, I know it's not my place to interfere me being but a sort of a slave, but if you'll only listen to what happened to us on that voyage, I'm sure you'd understand. It was an odyssey, wasn't it, Skip? A right ruddy odyssey.
All right, I'm listening.
Well, going back to the beginning... when we set out from Troy...
20 years ago.
All right. Yes, I grant you. But listen, we'd been going about 2 days, the Aegean Sea calm as a mill pond, the old galleon fair belting along, and the lads in really fine spirits.
Pull away on your oars, lads. In, out, in, out. Telemachus.
Aye, aye, Skip.
I wonder what that big rock is we're approaching.
Which rock, sir?
The one with the three girls on it combing their hair.
Three girls? Oh, sir, them are the sirens. Oh, sir, they're out of bounds to all ranks.
You two, sailor boy, and Lancer.
You who laughs this way for love.
Oh. Well, they seem rather friendly. Mm. See the tall one. Now, shall I steer that way? We might organize a ship's dance.
Oh, no, sir, no.
No?
No.
What?
No. The bints are there to lure us. They want us to hit that rock. You see, they'll start singing in a minute, and when they sing, sir, oh, their voices are so enticing, you can't help but row straight towards them. You can't help it.
All right, girls, with me. A one, a two, a three. Please knock the rock.
No, men, back. Come back, men, come back.
Keep rowing, men, keep rowing, keep rowing. Well, Mrs. Ulysses, it looked like we was doomed. But the skipper, he ran down among the lads and he shoved candles in their ears so they couldn't hear.
Then who steered the boat?
Well, I did. They lashed me to the mast, and I steered with one hand on the binnacle and the other on the tiller.
Oh, yes?
Darling, it's no good being cynical about me binnacle. That's what happened.
Really?
From that moment, strange perils beset us at every turn.
You amaze me.
Shall I tell you of Circe, the irresistible enchantress?
Hmm?
She with the milk-white shoulders and the walk like a pigeon on a hot pavement. Or shall I tell you of Aeolus, who had dominion over the four winds and who...
Tell me about Circe.
Tell her about Aeolus.
Yes, that's him, yes.
We ran aground. And you know where we found ourselves?
I don't care.
On an island inhabited by a race of great big one-eyed giants, the Cycloclips.
Cyclops, oh.
Cyclopsy.
Cyclops.
Oh,
yes.
Then there was the country of the Lotus Eaters, where those who tarried lost all desire to return home to their native shore.
Tell me about Circe.
Circe? Oh, well, yes, you see, there was this island, you see. And we stopped off there, you see, just to get some fresh fruit, darling, that's all. Well, Tilly and I, we were walking along in the middle of this island, you see, when suddenly, from behind a tree steps the loveliest creature you ever saw. She preceded us along the forest, walking with a particularly fascinating lilting movement. As I followed her, I felt Telemachus suddenly clutch my arm.
Watch it, Skipper, watch it.
I am. I can't take my eyes off it.
Not the path.
Her.
Oh, I've just remembered who she is. Skip, she's Circe.
Well, what about it? She seems a very nice type of girl.
A nice type of...
Yes.
Skip, if you knew Circe like I know Circe... She's a sorceress. She gets older men and turns them into swine.
Well, most older men turn into swine. I've noticed it at parties.
You've got an eye for that sort of thing.
I know, yes.
These are real swine. Pigs. She turns men into pigs.
Oh, well, now I don't fancy that.
Now, our best course is to nip straight back to the ship and sail off as soon as we... Hey!
What?
What about the crew? They're all ashore. Oh, I hope she hasn't... Skip, look in that glade. That must be the crew. She's pigged a lot of them.
No.
Yes. Oh, that big fat one, that must be the bosun.
Oh, yes, he's hardly changed at all, has he?
Quick, Skip, drive them all back to the ship. As soon as the spell wears off, they'll change back into men. Come on, lads. Come on, my lads.
Come on, then. Back to the ship. Best trot her forward.
Come on. Hey, you. I don't know what sailor you are, but you nuzzle me like that again, and you'll get a kick round the West Ham.
So, darling, we got them back to the ship and set course on the last 250 miles home. It took us 12 years.
12 years?
Well, you see, madam, Skip and I had to row that dirty great ship all on our own.
What about the crew?
We didn't have a crew.
Ah, but you just said...
Yes, well... We brought the wrong lot. Them pigs turn out to be real pigs.
Yes. Huh. So you see, darling, that's the full and true story of why it took your Ulysses 20 years to complete his voyage home. Are you satisfied now?
Satisfied? I've never in all my life heard a set of such obvious lies. Sirens, men turned into pigs. Do me a favor.
But, darling...
If that's the best story you can come up with, you'll find me and Mother.
Oh, dear. Not quite the warm welcome back you expected, eh, Skip?
No, good friend. But I think the old saying still applies.
What's that?
It may not be much, but it's Homer.
In a cabin, in a canyon, excavating for a mine, dwelt a miner, 49er, and his daughter, Clementine.
Light she was, and like a fairy, and her shoes were number 9, herring boxes without topsies, sandals were for Clementine.
Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, Clementine, thou art lost and gone forever, dreadful sorry Clementine.
Drove she ducklings to the water, every morning just at 9, hid her foot against a splinter, fell into the foaming brine.
Saw her lips above the water, blowing bubbles
Oh, I love my Clementine. Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling Clementine. Thou art lost and gone forever. Dreadful sorry Clementine.
How I missed her. How I missed her. How I miss my Clementine. Thou art lost and gone forever, oh my darling Clementine.
Thou art lost and gone forever, oh my darling Clementine.
Come along now, please. Satcha Parliament, gentlemen. Here, Mystic Lump.
Hey.
Carrying on with our discussion,
yes.
that son of yours, that Ron, you must admit he's a bit of a mystery.
No, Ted, no mystery at all. Huh? Not for them as have studied contemporaneous psychology.
Ah.
You see, my Ron, he's one of those here what they call angry young men. Oh. He's ever so angry.
Yeah.
He's protesting against a society what won't let him do what he really wants to do.
And what does he want to do?
Nothing. That's the old tragedy.
Yeah.
That's the nub of it. A sick civilization such as ours has no place for the born layabout.
Well, there must be some job for him.
Well, of course there is. But he don't want to throw himself away on some job that requires work. He fancies one of the professions. That's why he took up teaching.
Your Ron took up teaching?
Well, don't sound so incredulous. Didn't I ever tell you about it?
No.
Oh, yes. It was all his own idea, it was. Yeah. And when he told Eff about it, oh, she was thrilled. Thrilled, Ted. Thrilled.
Oh, Ron. All off your own back. Fancy setting yourself up as a teacher.
Yes, eh?
Oh, when I saw that board outside the gate, Ronald Glum, speech training taught, do you know, I felt tears well up.
Well up where?
I was choked, Ron. It's such a noble profession, teaching and speech training and teaching how to talk properly. That's really worthwhile.
That's what I thought, Ian.
Now tell me, Ron, whom are you going to teach talking properly to? Students?
No, eh?
Foreigners?
No, eh?
Well, whom?
Budgerigar. Listen, Eth, I saw a man on television doing a program about animals. And this man said, to make a budgerigar talk, you just stand still in front of the cage and say a phrase to it. So, I thought, Ron, at last a job worthy of you.
What'll you charge?
Dad says it should be the same as telegrams. Threepence a word.
Doesn't seem much.
I know, Eth, but I only know cheap words.
Well, make way, please. Make way. Here we are, Professor. Try this on.
What is it, Dad?
Well, I've been down the road and got you a mortarboard. Shove it on your head. I've wiped most of the mortar out. Let's have a look. Oh, yes. That'll look lovely with a coat of black paint and a tassel. Well, Eth, what do you think of our lad, eh? Ron the Don.
Well, I don't know. Do you think this whole idea is possible, Mr. Glum?
Of course, providing it's handled with a proper organisation.
Mm.
For example, see there. Look. This is an advertisement saying that Ron's budgie school is now open.
Mm.
It's just a simple, call it, dignified card, you see, what I'll get old Ted to hang up in his four-hour bar, just below the no-spitting sign. Or above, to be on the safe side.
Mr. Glum, may make a suggestion.
Oh, by all means, eh? We're on a new untried endeavor here, so all possible help is welcome. Be as suggestive as you like.
Well,
that's all.
I think of Budgerigar owners as being rather, well, very nice, respectable people.
Oh, yeah.
But I think you'd be better off putting your first advert in something like, well, the parish magazine.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do then. We'll put it in both places and we'll see which one brings the first customer.
Yes, I saw your advertisement, so I thought I'd take advantage of it.
Oh, well, which place did you see the advertisement? The pub or the magazine?
In the parish magazine.
Oh, well, very pleased to see you, Vicar. I'm glad to notice you brought your feathered friend.
Yes.
Now you'll want to meet the professor, won't you? Ron, this is the vicar and his bird. Vicar, this is Ron, ditto.
Yes. How do you do? How do you do?
Ron, raise your hat.
I can't, ask the mortar's set.
Oh, that's a lovely budgie, isn't it, Vicar? What's her name?
Her name? Actually, it's masculine.
Hello, masculine. Hello, masculine.
No, I didn't mean it. I meant it's a male bird.
Oh, my Uncle Charlie's one of those.
No. He didn't say jailbird. Vicar.
Yes?
You must pardon the professor here. These scholastics live in a world of their own, you know.
Quite.
Head in the cloud. Yes.
Well, the bird's name is Reggie. He's presented to me by our Darby and Joan Club company for me. You know, I dearly like to teach him a few words myself. But you know how it is. I haven't got the time.
It's 10:15.
Mr. Glum, I ask this in no spirit of disbelief, but did you say he was a professor?
I said that, yes.
Yeah.
Only where budgies are concerned, though. There, I aver this, he is unparalleled. One of the most eminent bird brains of this country. Now then, Vicar, perhaps you'd like to cast a perfunctory shufti at this list of phrases here. Pick out the one that tickles your fancy.
Oh, thank you. Now, let me see. Time, gentlemen, please. No, I don't think so.
Oh, no?
Chase me, No.
Oh.
No, I think number 27 has the real Darby and Joan ring.
Phrase number 27. Yes. Let's have a look. Oh, yes. Oh, very suitable sentiment, Ron.
Yes, Dad?
I love you.
Well, you don't act like it.
That's the phrase, Ron. The phrase.
The phrase. The phrase.
What could be more fitting for our first phrase?
Yes, I'm so pleased. Well, do you want me to put the bird in your hands now?
No, leave it in the cage.
Yes, that's what...
Yes.
Mr. Glum, are you quite
sure... He is a professor. You just let him have your Reggie and we'll phone you as soon as the bird is worked perfect.
Splendid. If this works out well, I'm sure I'll find you plenty of other customers.
That's it, Vicar. You spread the news around the parish. Tell every single parisher on your books. Now let me see you to the door, Vicar.
Oh, Ron, you hear that? If we just make this one bird say phrase 27, you're made. Ron, what are you looking so far away for?
Counting how many words there are in I love you. Three. Yeah, that's ninepence. I love you for ninepence. Yeah, that's the easiest ninepence I've ever earned. It's even easier than being unemployed.
Well, you haven't earned it yet, beloved. You've still got to make the bird say I love you.
Well, just watch me. Bird. Bird.
His name's Reggie, Ron.
Oh, Reggie Bird. Listen, I'm going to say a phrase, and I want you to say it back to me. Ready? Listen, I love you. You didn't say it, eh?
You had to keep on saying it.
Oh. Reggie Bird, listen. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you.
Well?
Not working, eh?
Ron, you must persevere over and over again.
All right.
Well, what are you waiting for?
What was the phrase again?
I love you.
Oh, yes. I love you. I love you. I love you.
Well, yes, Vicar. Yes, I know. Yes, I appreciate why you're telephoning me. Yes. Yes, I know it's been 2 days. Yes, I know. And I'm sure Reggie misses you, too. But it shouldn't be long now. Just leave it to the professor. Goodbye.
Getting impatient, Mr. Glum.
Well, he can't blame Ron. Every minute of the past 2 days, my boy has stuck at it.
Yes.
Been up all night, both nights as well. Seated there in front of the cage with his nose resting on the seed bin. Just staring at the bird and repeating over and over, I love you, I love you, I love you. Why, it gives me the shivers, it does. It's sort of McCrab, isn't it?
It worth it, Mr. Glum? I mean, for ninepence.
You know, I've got that blooming phrase pounding round in my brain now. I find myself repeating it in front of all sorts of people. I mean, I very nearly said it to Mrs. Glum. I mean,
I love you.
Oh, here they come. He carries the cage round with him every second.
I love you. I love you. I love you.
Where have you been, Ron?
I love you. I love you. Having a bath. I love you. I love you.
Oh, put the cage down, Ron.
I love you.
I haven't seen you all the evening.
I love you. I love you.
Dearest, do have a breather.
I love you.
Unhook the cage from your braces and sit down.
Oh, all right.
Well, Ron, has the bird said anything at all?
No, Daddy, just sits there cleaning his feet.
It's hardly the appropriate stance for declaring I love you, is it? Still keep at it, Ron.
Righto, Dad, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Yes, I know, Vicar. I know it's been 3 weeks. But, Vicar, we're coming on. Yesterday we got as far as Chirrupin. Well, no, not Reggie, Ron. Yes, I'll let you know. Must ring off now. Ron's coming.
I love you. I love you. I love you.
Here, Ron. I've got the toaster sealed. The chemist says you've now had his complete shelf full. Oh, Mr. Glum, let's call it off.
I love
you. Look at the
Oh, yes, it's true. His face is greener than the budgerigar's. All right, Ron, we know when we're licked. Stop it now. It's just not worth ruining your health. Not even for ninepence. Give me that bird.
You are dead.
Look at it. Call yourself a budgerigar. You're a rotten, scrawny, molting little scrag end. I hate you.
I love you.
Shut up. I'm not taking any lip from a... What?
I love you. I love you.
It spoke. It said it.
I did it, Dad. I did it.
Here, give me that phone. Quick, give me the vicar. The vicar, quick.
Oh, well done, Professor Ron. Well done indeed. A triumph of patience and fortitude. I give you my warm commendation.
You promised me ninepence. I've got warm combination.
And indeed you shall have it. Just let me hear dear little Reggie say his piece and I'll count it out with pleasure.
Lift the tea cloth off the cage.
Here we are, Vicar.
Ah, Reggie. Now, what have you got to say to me?
You're a rotten, scrawny, molting little scraggin. I hate you. Scrawny, scraggin. Rotten, molty, scrawny, scraggin.
I can explain.
Harry Rabinowitz and the BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Dick Bentley, Professor Jimmy Edwards, and June Whitfield, encouraged by Wallace Eaton and the Keynotes. Frank Muir and Dennis Norton wrote the script, and the program was produced by Charles Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in again next week and...